This is a CBC podcast. Make your own profile at the CBC Member Center, and you can post comments, photos, and videos at cbc.ca. You can also sign up for our news, sports, entertainment, radio, and podcasting newsletters. Just head to cbc.ca to sign up for the CBC Online Member Center.
This is The Inside Track, the podcast edition. Hello, I'm Teddy Katz, sitting in for Robin Brown. Peanuts, Cracker Jack, and steroids. The great American pastime is put to the test. And Canada's top male speed skater looks to Vancouver and beyond.
I'm thinking of maybe getting some sort of education in viticulture or oenology, growing grapes.
Jeremy Weatherspoon savoring each moment like a fine wine. The World Baseball Classic has been taking place in cities around the world, including here at the Rogers Center in Toronto. The idea is to have the top professional players suit up for their countries to make baseball more popular globally. But as the best in the world play ball, the sport is in crisis in the country where it all began. Steroids have thrown the game a curveball. The World Baseball Classic couldn't come at a better time for the game. The great pastime is supposed to be a distraction. Right now, the game needs some kind of distraction from itself, with what some say is its biggest scandal ever.
And this is definitely the worst because it's so large and it impacts so many people. It is the purest, the most American of sports.
Baseball, it is America.
Where you don't have a lot of the negative feelings that now come up thinking about, you know, who was cheating.
It takes away records that, you know, the great players of yesteryear have.
So that can never go away.
It takes away from the game.
That stain is there forever.
For this game, whose fans keep records better than some accountants, the stain isn't something that's going to come out in the wash. The steroids era has left a dark cloud over ballparks like this one. In December 2007, the Mitchell Report, commissioned by Major League Baseball, documented widespread use among players. The list of those implicated read like an all-star team. It included star pitcher Roger Clemens and home run record holder Barry Bonds. The controversy continued recently when the game's biggest slugger right now, Alex Rodriguez, admitted he took steroids.
I'm here to say that I'm sorry. In some ways, I wish I went to college and got an opportunity to grow up at my own pace. You know, I guess when you're young and stupid, you're young and stupid.
But until now, Rodriguez and many of the other players have never even received a slap on the wrist. At the time, baseball didn't have penalties for players who injected themselves with performance-enhancing drugs. There are about 100 or so other players who tested positive at the same time as Rodriguez, but they remain anonymous. How many of them may be on the fields here? We may never know. At a batting practice for the Canadian team, Jason Bay takes a few swings. Bay has had an impressive career playing for Pittsburgh, where he was Rookie of the Year and made the All-Star team. He's now a key member of the Boston Red Sox and trying to rise above the scandal.
It is a big deal, don't get me wrong, you know, and I think that sometimes that kind of stuff happens, and it's unfortunate at any level for anything, you know, and it just happens to be obviously a huge story because it's baseball, but at the end of the day, personally, it doesn't have a huge effect on me. You know, I still go about my business, doing my thing personally, just trying to lead by example and do things the right way. And people go down different paths, and, you know, I'm just proud of the way that I've gone about it.
Not far from Jason Bay, warming up his pitching arm, is Scott Richmond. Richmond is a bit of a late bloomer. After years of hard work toiling in the minor leagues, he's finally getting a chance to make it with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Even though the steroid scandal's coming out and all that, you know, there's still a whole ton of players, more than three quarters, that never did steroids. And that's the main part that everybody should really look at, you know. There are a few bad apples in the group, but the majority of the game is still good and the reputation's still there.
Does it bother you that everybody gets sort of painted with the same brush sometimes?
A little bit, you know, like, a lot of people didn't have to take it to get there, and they just go, oh, baseball players, oh, he's big, oh, he's on steroids. And it's not like that, you know, it's not like that. And these guys have a lot of hard work, they put a lot of hard work into their game, and they don't need to be getting trashed and about saying they've done steroids when they just had hard work their whole life. And it's just nice that we can finally start cleaning up this game a little bit and have it the great game that it actually is.
Another member of the Canadian team, Corey Koski, has played with three different teams, including Toronto, in his 9 seasons in Major League Baseball. He thinks the steroid scandal has been blown out of proportion.
The fact that they say the image got tainted for what a few guys have done, I think it's a media making a mountain out of a molehill, because at its peak, 15-20% were using steroids. You know, that's 80% of them weren't using steroids. So, you know, it's big news when Alex Rodriguez does steroids, and it's not big news when the other 480 guys don't take steroids. You know, just because one politician takes money doesn't mean all of them are going to take money. Just is what it is. I get frustrated with the media's coverage of political events and stuff that really matters in this world. You know, the one-sidedness and that reporting. But the fact, the sports stuff, there's a lot of bigger stuff going on in this world to focus my efforts and my brain power compared to focus on if Alex Rodriguez took steroids.
But it's not just Alex Rodriguez. The scandal has had an impact on everyone who's played the game, especially those at the top. The coach hitting the balls out at batting practice is Canada's best ever slugger. A menacing 6'3" and with a goatee, Larry Walker still stands out today, even a few years after he retired. Walker played 17 years in the majors and hit almost 400 home runs, the most ever by a Canadian. This year, he's being inducted into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. After he's finished hitting the balls to the team this morning, I pull him aside to talk about the impact the scandal has had on him.
How does that leave you feeling?
Well, just like everybody else, we're all clumped in this together. We're all part of a family, and it's a black eye on baseball, and it's a black eye for everybody because we're all grouped into it. So even the guys that are innocent, you know, I think are still looked at in a different way now.
Do you find that people even look at you because you're a pretty big guy and you hit home runs, so therefore they look at you and say, hey.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah, I'm sure they do. I can't change that. Nobody can change that. You know, people are they're allowed to look at anybody the way they want to look, so if that's what the way they think, then it's tough to change when you know, it's been happening to everybody. So you know, you just try and deal with it. But it doesn't get brought up much with me. I think some of the people that see me know that if I was putting steroids in me, I was putting the wrong kind. They didn't work too well. So it's hard for me to keep off weight right now. I'm not losing it. I just lost 23 pounds. I was not fitting into clothes, so I had to make some adjustments on my diet.
What would you say to the baseball fans out there that might, as you say, sort of paint everybody with that same brush?
Well, I mean, like I say, it's their thoughts, you know, and their feelings. So it's hard for them to, you know, I guess if you, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes right now, and who do you believe, who do you trust? You know, you've heard so many guys point at cameras and say they never took them, and then they get caught taking them, so I think they're just free to feel as they want, you know, it's a free world, and they can have their choice on what they think.
I heard from some of the players were saying to me, oh, the media makes more of this, and it's a mountain out of a molehill, but obviously this is something that bothers you as well.
Well, I don't lose sleep over it at all. The only time I ever talk or think about it is when I'm talking to you guys. It never, you know, it's not a conversation that I have with people, you know, sitting around dinner tables or anything like that. It doesn't come up. So this is the only time I talk about it, probably why I stutter talking at it, because I don't think about it. It's not something that's in my mind, so I have to try and come up with something off the top of my head to tell you.
Why do you think baseball, in the middle of all this, has had record attendance for the last 4 or 5 years? I mean, all this stuff has come out, and in the middle of all of it, record attendance, there's been unbelievable revenues for the game, and yet all of this stuff is swirling around.
I don't know, but that's something good to build on. You know, the old thing people always say is bad press is what sells, and you know, if people would strive more on what you just said, which is a positive, it can make things a little bit more enjoyable. But the things that get talked about and written about are the negative stuff. But you know, I've seen some surveys that have been done, and a lot of people don't really care. They're still going to watch the game. They're still going to come see the games and still cheer for their teams. That's something that's not going to change.
Any thoughts on why people don't care?
You know, I just think just for the love of the game. My favorite team is the Seattle Seahawks in the NFL. If somebody did something wrong on that team, I'd still keep cheering for them. I'd still go watch them. Can't always be good. You have your team, and a lot of people just love the game. They don't even have a team. They just love the game.
Ready for ball tickets! Who's got extra ball tickets? World Baseball Classic Program!
Kevin Smith has come to today's game between Canada and the U.S. in Toronto with his two sons. Benjamin and Joseph are 6 and 4.
And John! You hit that!
it.
I don't know.
Smith says they feel a real connection to the sport, despite everything that's happened.
You know, I don't talk about it that much with these little guys. They don't know much. I think they know about it, but it doesn't seem to affect them, and they love the players just for playing baseball because it's the same thing that they do out in the schoolyard or out at the ballpark.
How about you? How does it affect the way you look at it?
I'm a big romantic about baseball, so I want to be able to look at it 20 years down the road and just look back and say it's really unfortunate that happened, but the game has remained pure even though the athletes maybe haven't. I think people have stopped expecting a great deal out of professional athletes. Disappointment after disappointment, and it doesn't faze us as much as it used to.
True baseball fans in different parts of the world share Kevin Smith's enthusiasm.
Es el deporte número uno de Venezuela. Todos los venezolanos lo que les encanta es el baseball. Baseball.
A group of 500 fans flew into Toronto from Venezuela to watch their country compete this week. Baseball is the number one sport there. Carlos Moya wears a Venezuela crest on his chest and a passion for the game in his heart. Especially important, he tells me, in economic times like the ones today.
Yes, because, you know, with the economic crisis we have in the world, with all the problems, what this game does is it relieves some of the stress and relaxes people. Throughout history, people have needed these kinds of distractions, almost like they need food. It's a way for the masses to stay calm in times of crisis. Sport is passion, it's life, and these things that are happening with drugs, it really does make baseball look bad. But it's not going to change the passion fans like us have, the emotions we have for the game of baseball.
My name is Bob Fine. I live in Washington. I've been in D.C. now for 15 years. I'm 37 years old. As soon as I knew that the Expos were moving to Washington, I was first in line to make sure I could get season tickets, you know, because we were also building...
Fans such as Bob Fine feel in some ways they've been cheated by the game they love. For the past year, he's been thinking about giving up his season's tickets to boycott the game. He's fed up with the steroid scandal and especially how baseball has handled it. About a year ago, Fine started an online petition hoping to put pressure on Major League Baseball to do more to get rid of steroids from the game. His goal was to get 1 million signatures. So far, he says he struck out.
I went on all the message boards on each team on Major League Baseball and was telling people about the petition and trying to get people to sign. I mean, honestly, I got a lot of comments from people on the boards like, you know, well, they're not going to do anything and stop wasting your time and people don't care. I mean, I did get some signatures, but nowhere close to 1 million. At last count, I've got 76 total, not 100 or 1,000, but 76 signatures over the last year or so. Again, I've been trying to understand why the majority of fans aren't more upset, but how are other Major League Baseball players supposed to compete when they know their colleagues, you know, or the number one players are getting away with doing steroids and they're making all the millions and they're not punished for it at all or they're not even fined for it. It's a joke. I'm sorry. The players treat it as a joke. It's more now about managing the PR and the bad publicity. Like, it makes me upset to be a fan some days.
But there are other views online, including this website that promotes steroids.
Injected is brought to you by steroid.com, the world's most...
It argues fans don't care.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Injected. Let's talk about steroids and sports. If the sports leagues really wanted to ban steroids, they would. Nobody wants to wait another 40 years for a record to be broken. Not the owners, not the players, and especially not us fans. We want 100-mile-per-hour fastballs, and then we want to see those fastballs hit 500 feet out the park. That stuff puts asses in seats. And that's why baseball got more popular when all the steroid scandals hit.
So what are we to make of all this? Kenneth Shropshire is the director of the Wharton Sports Business Initiative at the University of Pennsylvania. It's a sports business think tank, and Shropshire specializes in legal and ethical issues. He equates the questionable ethics of some players in baseball to corporate executives, bankers, or Wall Street investors who've recently outraged people with their behavior.
They're all related. I mean, it usually is, how can I get an edge? How can I make my performance better than others? Accountants, cooking the books, Madoff not really making the investments with making high payments. So it's all related to how can I hit more home runs. It's always related to looking better than the competition in some way. So it's very similar.
What's different is the response from baseball fans.
On the corporate side, the reaction is harsher because there's actual dollar impact that can happen to shareholders in those businesses. There's actual thousands of employees in the case of Enron or Arthur Andersen. So people are impacted beyond just, you're my favorite player and you cheated. It's disappointing, but it's not necessarily a dollars and cents. I no longer have a job at my office in Houston because Enron has gone under kind of feeling. So it's very different in terms of the actual hardcore impact that occurs.
In fact, something interesting has happened to baseball, this game of numbers, in the years since the steroid scandal first broke. The records might be tainted, and disappointed fans have debated what to do about all this, but there are more people attending games in the last 2 years than ever before in baseball's long history. So maybe some fans don't care, or they're pretty quick to forgive. Or they're looking past the players to the game many still see in its purest form, despite all the evidence to the contrary. If you're interested in finding out more about the anti-steroid petition I was talking about, you can go to ZeroToleranceForBaseball.org. Canada speed skaters are the team to watch at next year's Olympics in Vancouver. This weekend, they're competing at a World Cup event at the new Oval in Richmond. They're trying to see how they stack up. One of the team's biggest names, Jeremy Witherspoon, is watching from the sidelines. Witherspoon broke his arm in November and has missed most of the season. It's the latest disappointment for him. Witherspoon has won more World Cup victories than any other male skater in the history of the sport. He also has a silver medal from the Olympics in Nagano. But the last couple of Olympics haven't gone well. He had a poor performance in Turin and a fall at the start of a race in Salt Lake City. Witherspoon is now back training, hoping his Olympic fortunes will be reversed in Vancouver. Jeremy is at the Oval in Richmond. Jeremy, welcome to the Inside Track.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
How is your arm healing, first of all?
It's coming along. It's definitely taken a while. Some things have gone faster than I expected and some things slower. My surgeon has been really happy with the progress of the bones in the way they've been healing and with the reactivation of the radial nerve in my arm. I was having a lot of trouble using my hand and lifting it up, and now that's all back. So it's just a matter of re-strengthening and getting the range of motion back in my arm and making sure the bones have set and unified really strongly, and it's pretty much ready to go. It's surprising to me now, considering how I felt in the beginning. It's really kind of surprising that I can lift weights now and go out and skate and feel pretty normal.
Take me back to what happened.
When I look back at the video and kind of when I think about how it felt at the time, it looks like I stepped in a previous rut from another skater, and it just pulled my skate out faster than I could apply pressure to, so I couldn't stay up on my feet. And as I was sliding at the mats, I really didn't have much time because I was in the outer lane, and I was using my arm to try and steer so I didn't hit face first. But because of that, I ended up pinning my arm between myself and the mats, and it twisted back much further than it's meant to. And that's why it broke in 6 places. It was a pretty bad spiral fracture in the upper arm. And my shoulder capsule is also a little bit, it's hard to say exactly what's wrong. It's definitely got some soreness and some issues in there that I have to be patient with.
Obviously, next season is the Olympics in Vancouver. How has it affected your plans for those games?
It hasn't really affected my plans for the season, for next season. You know, it forced me to change my build-up and progress through this season. You know, a lot of my goals when I could start training again were to be in top shape and ready to train with no restrictions by the end of April, which is when we start our season again for 2010 season. So that's my main goal, and that's still what I'm building towards. And and it seems to be going right according to plan right now.
With everything that's happened to you at the past couple of Olympics, how important are these games in Vancouver for you?
The main importance of them for me is that it's, you know, it's a chance to race the Olympics in Canada, and it's a chance to go back through all the things that I think I could have done better and physically and mentally, and give myself the best shot that I can to go into the games and make them, you know, my games, make them the event that I want it to be and experience it the way I want to experience it. I don't want to go into it feeling like, you know, I have to do well. I want to go in it and I want to do well because I want to do well.
So when you go back to something like the fall in Salt Lake City, what is the biggest thing you learn from something like that?
From something like that, the biggest thing you can learn, you can have what feels like perfect preparation and things can still, you know, not go the way you want. So it's really, really important to get that balance of physical and mental preparation so that I feel like I'm physically ready and mentally in the right frame of mind to race.
There's going to be a lot of expectations on the shoulders of athletes given all the lead up to these games and having them here at home, all the media attention as well. How difficult do you think it's going to be for athletes like yourself to deal with that?
I think, you know, that again varies from athlete to athlete, and I hope that every athlete can see that as those expectations as support and knowledge in the media of what our athletes are capable of. That's the way I see it. I think that any time I've been expected to do something is because people think that I'm that good and that I have that ability. And if it wasn't in Canada, the next Olympics, we wouldn't have as much of the support and the opportunities that we've had so far. So it's definitely a good thing that it's here.
What are some of the things that you do away from, say, speed skating that may help you when you're trying to prepare mentally for Vancouver?
The main thing is to prepare mentally is to have a balance, you know. You know, I train hard physically every day, and to be mentally prepared, you also have to train mentally, but it's also important to get a balance so that I'm not always using my brain and my body for one thing. So I like to spend a lot of time, I've probably said it before to you, that I do a lot of fly fishing, and I'm into to wine. I really like wine a lot, so that's definitely a physical, that's, I guess maybe wine, sometimes it's a mental break too, but it definitely has a, it's different than training, that's for sure, and probably sometimes has a good effect, sometimes has a bad effect, but it's good to get breaks and get that balance and, you know, have fun and lots of other experiences alone and with my teammates than just training together and racing together.
Is there a way that you can kind of take that feeling that you have when you're out in the water fly fishing and somehow put yourself on the ice at the Olympics and put yourself in that moment enjoying it in the same way you'd be out on the water fly fishing type of thing?
Probably I would say my best races are very similar to when I'm fly fishing, because the one thing that's great about being out on a river or a lake fishing is I'm, you know, completely immersed in what I'm doing. I'm fishing and I'm thinking, am I using the right fly? Should I be fishing a bit deeper? Or should I, you know, be moving my line differently so to put different action on my fly? And when I'm racing my best, I'm just thinking exactly what I'm doing in the race. I'm thinking about getting pressure into the ice at the right part of my push and having my body in the right position. And I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm just sort of lost in that moment, just like fishing. And I know that when I go into a race as into the moment as when I'm fishing, I always have a good race.
Jeremy, you are the most successful male speed skater in history, yet many Canadians seem to know more about you, your fall and Olympic disappointments and things like that. How do you feel about that?
You know, that's life as a speed skater, because the Olympics receive a lot more attention than a World Cup, and I knew that before I got into the World Cup scene, and that's the reason, though, that I wanted to continue speed skating was to go to the Olympics, and the reason that I wanted to go to the Olympics were because it's the biggest event. So it's not surprising to me that's what I'm most known for, and I know that, you know, whatever I'm most known for doesn't define me in my eyes, and that's what's most important to me is what I think of myself.
What are your plans for after Vancouver?
After Vancouver, it's hard to say. I'm thinking of maybe getting some sort of education in viticulture or oenology, which is growing grapes and making wine. But I don't know if I'd do that right away. It's hard to say right now. I have a few interests and a couple opportunities that I have to weigh when the time comes. Right now, I'm not really ready to make that decision while I'm still competing. You know, after I'm done skating, I'd really like to do some coaching. I definitely would like to give back in a way. And, you know, impart some of the knowledge that I think has helped me to be good at speed skating. And other than that, I'd like to get my own land and grow all my own food and then just live off the land after that for the rest of my life. I just like the idea of being able to provide for myself, and I think it's good for my my image of being a sustainable person, and I like the idea of the more you do, like when I make a meal, I definitely have a lot more pride in it than when I buy a meal. And I've done some renovations in my house, and the parts of the house that I did on my own, I definitely have a greater attachment to than the parts that I've hired people to do. So I know that providing for myself and hopefully family would, I think, be a great way to live. And maybe I'd trade with some other farmers in the area. I don't know if I'd provide all of my necessities, but my girlfriend wants to have a cow, and she would be in charge of making cheese, she said. So I can leave that to her, and I'll look after the vegetables and wine.
Do you grow any of your own food right now?
I've gardened a bit, but it's kind of tough when you're training and traveling to spend the rest of the day weeding a garden or watering. But we always had a garden growing up in Red Deer. My parents always planted a garden every year, and I always remember that food being the best food that I could eat.
So you're planning on opening a vineyard sometime soon?
Sometime. I don't know how soon, but I'd like to. I think that'd be an interesting and probably pretty difficult way to make a living, but it's definitely something that I'd be interested in.
Well, we'll have to talk more about that in the future, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Inside Track, the podcast edition. Thanks to my producer, Mark Crawley, and I'm Teddy Katz.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.